Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of Leverage 2 Market Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Carla Hall. And Carla is a food contributor on Strahan and Sarah. She was formerly a co-host of ABC's Emmy Award-winning popular lifestyle series, The Chew. And she's perhaps best known as a competitor on Bravo's Top Chef and Top Chef All-Stars, where she won over audiences with her fun catchphrase, Hootie Hoo, and her philosophy to always cook with love. Carla's approach to cooking blends her classic French training and Southern upbringing for a twist on traditional favorites. She's created some cookbooks, Carla Hall's Soul Food Every Day in Celebration, Carla's Comfort Food, Favorite Dishes from Around the World, and Cooking with Love, Comfort Food That Hugs You. So welcome, Carla.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's fantastic to have you. We don't usually talk to too many food contributors, so this is a nice change. So tell me, you've written this book about soul food. Talk to me now a little bit, and what made you decide to write that book?
I had gotten my DNA done from African ancestry about 8 years ago, and that was on my mother's side. And then I did it again 5 years later and got my DNA from my father's side. And then I became the culinary ambassador of the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C.
Oh, excellent.
And through that experience, I just became more and more curious based on all of the information that I was getting. It was the work that Jessica Harris did at the African American Museum, showcasing the four different kiosks and the North, South, West, the Creole Coast, the contributions of African Americans in these different areas that got me to thinking, if my ancestors came over today, how would we be eating? And I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and this whole idea just kept rolling around in my head, and that's the basis for this book.
How interesting. So this is kind of a little bit different for looking. It's not a cookbook in the sense of here's a bunch of recipes, but you're kind of looking at history, looking forward, et cetera. What did you find as challenges when you sat down to write this? Were there things in terms of was it just a difficult topic to deal with? Are there expectations about the way you should be writing this? So tell us a little bit about that whole process.
I think the biggest challenge that I was facing was the idea of what is soul food. And when I first said to my literary agent, oh, I want to do a book on soul food, she was like, no, I don't think so. I think you have a really broad audience and you're going to ostracize some people. And I took offense to that because I said if I was Italian or if I was Chinese or Korean or Indian, would you say that? And I think that the role that African Americans play in American food has, you know, is rather twisted, and it's a very complicated relationship. And so if you tell me no, you may as well be telling me yes, because I'm so stubborn and tenacious. And so all of this work that I had found through Jessica Harris, and you know, I spoke to another culinary historian, Psyche Williams, and their work is so important, but we don't know about it. And so another thing that I wanted to do was to showcase the work that they do, but because I'm in pop culture, sort of shine the light through my lens, through pop culture, on what they do.
No, that's interesting because don't think I've ever heard the word culinary historian before. And I'm sure I've probably learned about these things. But so a culinary historian is kind of looking at what a particular group of people would have eaten in the past, or can you explain a little bit more about what that is?
Yes. So what a culinary historian does is looks at our food ways. And the food ways could be how food started in one area and then moved through the influence of another group and how it changed. And so there's an organization called the Southern Food Ways, and most cultures here in the States has some kind of culinary historian where people are just focused on those food ways. And I think the beautiful thing about doing this now is because people are curious about where their ancestors come from. So in addition to finding out where you are, where you're from, and you're taking a DNA test, I mean, imagine if you're going back in time and looking at what that looks like on a plate.
Interesting. Fascinating. So did you learn some new things that you weren't expecting as you went through this process?
I did. I took a trip through the South. We started in Savannah, and then we went to Charleston. We then we flew actually to Savannah, and then we drove through all these other cities. I was in Alabama, where we went to Birmingham, and then Selma, and then Montgomery, and then we went to Jackson, Mississippi, Greenwood, and then we finished in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
And because I went with the intention of talking to farmers and older people about their food and young people and chefs, it just opened my eyes. I grew up in the South, but I had never really looked at the food scene through the lens of history.
Mm.
Because I just took it for granted. You eat what you eat, you don't question it, think about, oh, how did this become this way? And so there were some really interesting stories, even shrimp and grits. So when I went through the Sea Islands in South Carolina, and I'm talking to BJ Dennis's mom. BJ Dennis is also a culinary historian and chef. And so I was talking to his mother, and I said, you're from this part of the country. How did you all eat back in the day? And, mm-hmm. and she's in her early 70s. So as a little girl, she is saying how her family would fish and get their shrimp from the waterways there, and then they would make their grits very plain. It wouldn't have any milk in it. It wouldn't have any cheese. You know, it would maybe seasoned with salt and pepper and a bay leaf, made with water. And then you have the shrimp, which was so sweet because they just caught it and it was so fresh. So they didn't put all of this heavy gravy on it. They just cooked it very simply with peppers and onions and maybe tomatoes. And it was just a very light and loose sauce with a little bit of garlic. And so when she told me that, I was like, wow, so let me go back and make a shrimp and grits dish that maybe she would have had as a little girl, because I am of the thought, if we as African Americans go back to our heritage cooking, not healthy cooking, but if we go back to our heritage food, the way that it used to be, it's a lot healthier, and our bodies would respond to it.
You know, I was thinking that as you were saying it, because when you're going back to the basics, to the way people used to cook before we had additives and processed food and all that other stuff we had in there, it's probably a more natural way to eat, and therefore it's healthier. And we've lost that over time, I think. You know, we've got all this modern stuff that probably isn't as good for us. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yes. We have lost it, but the thing is, there are all of these grains that are available today that weren't available even 5 years ago. So I couldn't have written this book. I have in it sorghum grains and millet. I talk about these stone ground grits, and grits have made a resurgence and because of companies like Anson Mills. So there are things that weren't even available. They just sort of went away because of how we were cooking, just as you described.
So it seems like it sounds like what you really want to do is get to the authentic ingredients, the things that really go back to the way things were done. And I think authenticity is one of these concepts that seems to to kind of flow through some of the things you've done. So talk to me a little bit about the idea of authenticity and how you see that as being important in what you do.
For me, my six-word novel is Say Yes, Adventure Follows, Then Growth. And when I tell people that I've never set goals, they're like, really? I've set an intention. I've set the intention to be happy in whatever I do. And so I will take risks. I will just say, hey, I'll just say yes to this thing. I've never done this before because I'm curious. And in that process, there's an adventure. And it may be a great adventure that I want to do again, or it may be an adventure that scared the bejeevers out of me and it was a failure, but I still learned something, you know? And then you're going to have growth either way, whether you want to do it again or you don't want to do it again and you learn something. So for me, it's always been this thing of just truly showing people that I want to do this thing. And when people meet me after, when I've been on television, they will say, wow, you're exactly the same way that you are on television. And for me, as an individual and my mother's daughter, that is the biggest compliment that you can give me.
Wow. So what we see on TV is who you are. It's not some kind of made-up persona, which is what we see about a lot of people on TV, right? We're not sure who they are. But when we see Carla, we see Carla.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my friends from way back have said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you have actually gone on television saying what you say, and you're the same goofy person that you've always been. And again, even though it's tongue-in-cheek and, you know, it's a little dig, it is who I am, and that I feel like that is a compliment.
So, because we're focused on marketing here and marketing in kind of a general sense, you've kind of created this brand around yourself, right, that focuses on who you are and et cetera. Talk to me a little bit about kind of how you've kind of created this authentic self that's still a brand. What were you thinking about as you went through this process from the Top Chef to the Chew, you know, to now being on this new show, Stray Ann and Sarah, which used to be called Good Morning America Day? How did that process kind of work for you in creating a personal brand?
I honestly didn't think about it the way that I think in a very strategic way until I had PR. And this was after I had gotten out of Top Chef. So I did Top Chef in 2008 the first time. And then I had decided in, I think it was 2010, to get PR. And that was a huge decision because I know how expensive PR is. And the one thing that the PR agency said to me, she said, you don't care about being famous, so you probably will be very successful. And it was always this thing of, you know, just doing what I do and people happen to be watching. And so I carried that forward, and I was always ready to tell people when I failed. And so when I talked about Cooking with Love, and that was on Top Chef, and that's just sort of stuck. And so sometimes you don't know what people resonate with. And so the great thing about social media is that you're getting instant feedback.
Yep.
So when people were going out and they're like, oh, hootie hoo, and oh, you're the one who cooks with love. Oh, you're the one who makes comfort food. And I didn't even think of myself like that. In my head, I was running away from comfort food, southern food, soul food. I was running away from it. And it was actually on Top Chef, and people were saying, oh, this is who you are, that I was like, oh, you know, somebody said, and I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but we're three people, the person others think we are, the person we think we are, and the person we really are.
Mm.
And if that becomes a very close, almost the same person, then you actually are living your authentic life. And it was when I started hearing that I said, I should really focus on this Southern food or, you know, a comfort food. And I just leaned into it because that was not my intention. But I do know that when I was on Top Chef, I found it very comforting to make the food that I wanted to eat because I was so freaking stressed out. So really, and ever since then, that has sort of been my brand. It's comfort food and just food that makes you want to, that hugs you, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Great. So what kind of learnings do you have if people said, gee, I'd like to get into doing something like this, writing about something personal that, you know, that really is authentic and tells me where I'm coming from? What suggestions would you have to people who might be thinking about following a path similar to what you've taken without having the whole background of where you've been? So any suggestion for someone, maybe like a younger you or someone else out there?
Yeah, I think that what I would say is to rely on maybe your friends. If you are a writer, even if you're not, to work along with somebody, because sometimes the things that they hear are very different than the things that you hear, because you have to step back and tell your story. Sometimes it's really hard to tell your story. I mean, perfect example was when I went online to do online dating, which is how I met my husband, but I had somebody help me to write my profile because I'm not going to compliment myself, you know,
right,
the way that maybe somebody wants to see me. So I think one, have somebody to write with you or to take interviews with you. The woman that was writing with me and is my co-author, Genevieve Coe, this was our third book together. But one of the things that I loved on this particular project was that we were traveling together and really getting to know each other. So she saw a different side of me, even though before we were doing recipes, but now it's more storytelling.
So really the storytelling is key. This is not just about recipes. This is telling the story of where this has been, where you are, where it's going.
Yes.
And that's fascinating in itself, as opposed to here's five ingredients, here's how you make shrimp and grits. So it's
exactly
that whole storytelling piece.
And making and thinking about how the recipes really are a conduit to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're creating these food memories. And that's another thing that I've always said about myself when people say, what is your specialty? And I would say food memories. Because as a caterer, when people ask you to make something, it's always connected to a memory and you're always doing some kind of special event. So I think I would say to people, figure out what your in is, like how are you going to tell that story? What makes your storytelling special? And find out, and you'll learn a lot about yourself as well through this process.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about food memories because it's really the emotions, right? Gee, I ate that, and I was in this situation, maybe with this family member, or it was this time in my life, and it felt good, or it felt bad, or whatever. But so it's really the emotion, which when we think about marketing is key. You think about what we're trying to do is we're trying to evoke that feeling of an emotion so that people are interested in spending more time with us or buying our product or eating our food or whatever. So it's kind of an interesting thing that you're talking about here with the food memory.
That's exactly right.
Where are you going next? You've had your own show. You've now on the Good Morning America, which is now Streisand and Sarah. You've got your books. What's next for you?
I feel like my next job will still be in television. I am pitching shows, and I hope that goes well. The thing is, that takes just as long as it does to open a restaurant. So, you know, it takes a year plus, you know, to bring that into fruition. I also would love to do a food line. and where I'm making soul food and just to be accessible to people and to share this food. The one thing that I didn't talk about was in the book, and this was all about marketing, and I think we'll see how successful this is, but soul food, the soul food that I think most people know is the celebration foods. Those are all the fattening foods that we're eating, the fried chicken, the mac and cheese, the candied yams, et cetera, et cetera. The food that you don't hear about are the everyday foods, and every culture has them. Every culture has these celebration foods. Our food has just, African Americans, has just gotten stuck in the celebration foods because that was a way to make money. That's how people were expressing themselves in restaurants. So it's going to be a huge undertaking, and my book tour was all about marketing the two sides of the coin of soul food, everyday and celebration.
Interesting. Interesting. So have you found that the people come up to you and say, wow, this is something I wasn't aware of, or you're bringing back this memory of something I ate years ago when I was younger? Do you see that kind of connection to what you're doing here?
Yes. I mean, there are people who will get the book and they will say, oh, my gosh, this reminds me of my grandmother's this or my grandmother's that. And even saying, oh, I've never thought to grill celery, or I've never had sorghum grains. I've never had millet. I even did a dinner a week ago at the National Press Club in D.C., and one of the guests said, well, I don't like soul food, but I saw the menu and I came to this dinner. Now,
because they had a vision of what soul food was, yeah.
Exactly. And I said, well, sir, this menu is actually soul food as well. Well, no, I don't like soul food. And I couldn't tell him. He was not going to hear it. He just said, I want this food. And we had done the millet with roasted cauliflower and lemon. We had done fish with chilies and herbs. And, you know, all of this food that I envision my ancestors would have done. And I'm not the first one to do this book either. Or this kind of book. You know, so there are many chefs who have done it. I am just the one who is visible. And so now people are like, oh, look over here. But now I can talk about all these other people who have been doing this work, you know.
Yep, absolutely. God, that's great. So if people want to find out more about you, where should they go? Can you give us a link where people can go to find out more about you and your book and all the great things you have going on?
Yes, they can go to my website, carlahall.com.
Fantastic. Thank you. And, Carla, God, it's been wonderful. Like, I love to talk about food. I love to eat food. So we don't get to talk about food marketing very much, and yet it's a huge part of our lives because we're marketed to all the time. And I love the fact of going back to our roots and building something that's a little bit more authentic. So thank you so much, Carla, for being here and sharing this with us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Linda, for having me.
Great. Thank you. This is Linda Popke. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by Leverage 2 Market Associates. If you'd like to find out how powerful marketing results can transform your organization, contact us at www.leverage2market.com.